Chapter 5. By dinner, the rain has slackened off some, although the wind and surf are still quite high. Styles has no doubt that this is just a temporary lull. Sally has to rest sometime, he supposes, and he knows that warlocks are more powerful at night. The staff is cheerful and seems to think that the storm will probably be over by the next day. They serve several kinds of lasagna for dinner, and the food is just as good as it was the day before. Styles is glad that the kitchen still has power, although he can't help but wonder how long the generators will last. There's no point in worrying about it yet. The dining room has plenty of windows, so some dim light filters in through them. Plus, there are plenty of candles. Styles sits in a corner with his pack, his father, Deaton, and a few of the other hunters. Most of the adults are on patrol, but Mikhail is there because his nephew is too, shaky and pale but healing. Wednesday and Sketch are joining them as well, because Wednesday offered to take a night shift. The werewolves weren't asked to take turns on patrol, and Styles didn't volunteer them. Annika doesn't join them, because she can't be seen with them now, but sends a message through Jackson that things with Stella went okay, and she's laid some groundwork. Styles approves. He knows that going too fast will only give Annika's motives away. "So, did Stoddard say anything useful?" he asks his father. Tom, who looks like he has an enormous headache, says, "It was like pulling teeth, but yes. We basically confirmed that it must have taken magic to get them here, and no one who works at the prison on a regular basis does magic. That won't help prove Sally's guilt, though. He'll just say that one of the two warlocks who escaped must have done it."
"True. How many of those guys knew where the conclave was going to be?"
"Pretty much everyone. It wasn't a secret." Tom sighs as Styles nudges his salad bowl towards him. "He said that as far as he knew, Caleb's pack had 15 people in it, and he's pretty sure that a few of them have died in the interim. So it's likely that a couple of the werewolves here aren't part of that pack."
"What about the warlocks?"
Deaton asks. "Well, after some extensive needling, I think I figured out who we're after. Sally mentioned a guy named Dante, and that's the first one that Jim admitted to. Dante DeLuca."
"I've heard of him," Deaton says, nodding. "He's a bad egg all around."
"Well, according to Stoddard, that bad egg made a mistake of trying to harness one of the ley lines in the White Mountains. God knows for what. And wound up with his ass in their prison. He's been there about 6 months. Now, the second one, he kept claiming he couldn't think of who it might be until I mentioned what you guys ran into earlier today with the birds." Tom picks up his glass of water. "Then he suddenly recalled that yes, there was a warlock who used mostly air magic and was fond of avian constructs that they captured. It was a little while ago, he said, so it wasn't as fresh in his memory. That's a guy named Blaine something. Acklin, I think he said."
"I haven't heard of him," Deaton says.
"From what Stoddard says, I don't know that you would have come across him. He seemed pretty young from the description, maybe in his early 20s. Got into black magic as a way of revenge on people he felt had slighted him."
"He must love Stoddard then," Derek says, and Tom sighs and nods.
"Any idea on the Sally Stoddard special?" Styles asks.
"Not sure. I did ask about more rare creatures. He said that there was a water elemental in there, and that might be what's causing the bad weather. Plus, he mentioned a manticore and a boggle, but he didn't think that either of them were likely to come here."
"Any creature from Faerie would head straight back there," Deaton says. "And manticores are basically animals, so I agree."
He puts down his fork and stands.
"I'm going to see if there's anything I can do to nullify the storm. If it's a water elemental, rather than Sally, I might be able to communicate with it."
"Sounds good to me," Styles says. "Need any help?"
"I'll be all right, thank you," Deaton says. "Just need some peace and quiet."
They finish eating and then adjourn to their rooms. Without electricity, their options are limited. Styles is already envisioning the panic everyone is going to have when their cell phones start to die. Not that they're good for much without a network. They grab a few of the games from the basement and bring them upstairs.
and waste time playing Clue and Sorry. Everyone ends up turning in early. It was a long day, and the next will probably be longer. Styles curls up in a bed with Derek on one side and Isaac and Lydia on the other. He wakes up to an enormous rumble of thunder, so loud that he shouts and flails his way out of bed. Derek, who is sleeping in his human form, sits up and catches him before he can actually fall on his face. "Just thunder," he says. Styles groans as it continues to rumble through the room. "So close," he says. "Sounded like part of the building fell off or something."
"Yeah,"
Derek rubs at his back. They sit there for a minute in silence as rain begins to hammer at their windows.
"Guess Deaton didn't have any luck with the water elemental."
"If that's even what's causing this," Styles agrees. Their windows are rattling from the force of the gusts of wind. "Guess I'll try to get some more sleep." It doesn't come easily. He thinks twice about getting up, but since he isn't at home and can't resort to any of his staple distractions, like baking or watching TV, he decides against it. Finally, he falls back into a restless doze. He's somewhat surly when the alarm goes off the next morning. That's one good thing about the old-fashioned hotel. There are manual alarm clocks, so they still know the time after their phones die. The doors lock manually as well. They'd be in more trouble if they had electronic key cards for their rooms.
"Why'd you set it so early?" Isaac moans.
He's never been a morning person.
"I want to check in with the night shift," Styles says. He's just crawled out of bed and is looking for some clothes when there's a scream that rings through the entire hotel.
It's the kind of full-throated hysterical scream that comes from somebody who's never seen a dead body before. It's quickly followed by pounding feet. Styles, who's one leg into his pants, nearly falls over before bolting into the hallway. The screaming hasn't stopped, so it's easy to follow to its source. There's a young woman in a hotel outfit standing in the lodge's main room, screaming her lungs out over a dead body. A dismembered body, to be precise. There's blood everywhere. People are leaning over the balcony railing to see what's going on, and the stairs are getting crowded. Derek grabs Styles in a quick reverse piggyback and then jumps over the railing, landing a few feet away from the woman. She sees them and stumbles backwards, holding her hands up in surrender.
Hey, it's okay, Derek says, letting Styles down. It's okay. We won't hurt you. You're safe. We won't hurt you.
Other people are flooding in. Styles takes a step back so he's not standing in a pool of blood, and realizes that it's not just one body. It's at least two, possibly more.
"The fuck?"
he breathes out, trying to figure out who it was. He sees at least one head, but the face is unfamiliar.
"The fuck?"
"Jesus Christ!" Chris Argent has seen his fair share of bloodshed, but even he bites out a startled curse when he sees the carnage. There's screaming from another part of the hotel. Everyone's head whips around. Chris's moment of hesitation is too long, and Tom's takes over. "Allison, Lydia, find the manager. Gather the staff and keep them in one place. Scott, Isaac, go see what the other person is screaming about. It's probably more bodies. Chris, do you know who these people are?"
"At least one of them is Julian's guys, but I'm not sure of the other..."
Styles is about to say something when he hears someone shouting his name, and there's a flash of red hair in the crowd. Sketch elbows his way past and grabs Styles by the shoulder.
"I can't find Lucy! I can't! She was on patrol last night, and this whole place is full of bodies, and I can't..."
"Shit," Styles says, going pale. Derek has handed the sobbing employee off to Erica and Mac.
"You can't sniff her out? Fucking everything just smells like blood!"
Styles looks at his father, who nods. "Go. Chris and I will take care of this and reconnoiter."
"Do you know where she was?" Styles asks Sketch.
Yeah, I sat with her for a while at her post, but then she told me to go get some sleep."
Sketch is already jogging through the foyer with Styles and Derek on his heels. He heads back up the stairs and onto the second floor, then down one of the side hallways.
"She was here. She..."
Sketch points to a padded bench. There's no blood, any more than Stiles can smell in every direction, but the doorway to their right has been broken down. He heads inside and finds a room that's been turned into shambles. It's one of the lodge's most posh suites, and it doesn't seem like it was occupied. There's no luggage, and the bed is mostly made, although knocked askew. The windows are intact, so whatever happened to Wednesday, it probably happened in this room. There are a few splashes of blood on the walls. Stiles touches it gently, and it's damp, but not warm. Then there's a bloody handprint by the door. Someone had staggered away and grabbed the wall for support. Stiles puts his hand up against it, carefully not touching it, and finds that it's close to his in size, much too large to be Wednesday's. He feels his stomach start to churn, because it looks to him like Wednesday was chased into this room and fought off her attacker, yet she's nowhere to be seen. If she had been badly injured, why wouldn't she have cried out for help? For that matter, why hadn't any of the people being attacked made enough noise to wake someone up? Stiles does a quick search, moving pieces of furniture and shoving things around, but he doesn't see anything. He's about to say that he thinks she might have left when Derek grabs his wrist. "I hear a heartbeat," he says, and cautiously heads further into the room. He stops in the corner and says, "It's behind the wall? What's this panel here?" "Oh, shit! That's a dumbwaiter, I bet," Stiles says. There aren't any in their rooms, but he bets the really expensive suites have them. "Jesus, could Wednesday fit in there?"
"I bet she could if she was properly motivated," Derek says. He grabs the door's tiny handle and looks at Stiles.
Stiles pulls out his .38 on the better safe than sorry principle and holds it ready. Then he gives Derek a nod. He tugs the door open and Wednesday practically spills out of the tiny box. Sketch lets out a yelp and runs forward, tugging her free. She's pale but conscious. Her hair has mostly come out of its braid, and there are smears of blood across her cheeks. Her shirt is soaked with it.
"Jesus," Stiles says, as Sketch gets her lying down. He wishes his father hadn't sent Scott off.
"I'm okay," Wednesday says. Her voice is thin and reedy. "It's not mine. Can't move my arm, though. I think my shoulder's dislocated."
"Must have hurt like a bitch to cram yourself in there," Stiles says, and she nods.
They've all had some basic first aid, so he carefully takes her arm and rotates it gently. She lets out a string of swears that would make Erica proud.
"Yeah, dislocated for sure. Hold still. This is gonna hurt like a bitch."
Wednesday nods and grits her teeth. Stiles shoves her shoulder back into place and she spits out more profanities. But then she opens and closes her fist and gives him a nod of thanks.
"What happened?"
Sketch asks, his voice still a little high-pitched from panic.
"Was it the ghouls? How did they get inside?"
Wednesday is already shaking her head. "No, it was Kyle Nazario." Everyone blinks at her.
"Another hunter attacked you?"
"Yeah, that's why I hid. He had a fucking axe. I could have killed him, maybe, but I..."
Wednesday grimaces. "He didn't know who I was. I'm pretty sure he'd been mind-whammied by one of the warlocks."
"Jesus! We'd better get downstairs!"
Stiles will feel better once she's been checked for injuries anyway. He and Sketch help her to her feet. Her ankle is twisted as well, but she accepts their help with her usual practicality.
"When he came at me, I went through the door and slammed it after me," Wednesday tells them. "I'd opened it earlier, so I would have more room to fight if I needed it. It was locked, but an easy pick. He broke it down after me. I thought I was going to have to kill him. Maybe I did. I know I got him with my knife a few times. But then I saw the door for the dumbwaiter. I got in a good kick to the gut and crammed myself inside. He left a few minutes later. I would have let myself out, but because I couldn't move my arm, I couldn't get the door open."
"How long ago was that?" Derek asks.
"I'm not sure. Maybe an hour?"
"Jesus! He could still be out there axe-murdering people!"
Sketch says. Stiles doubts it. He's willing to bet that whatever magic the warlock had used, it had only been good until sunrise.
That would explain why Kyle had left Wednesday where she was instead of continuing to try to get to her. The magic must have kept anyone from hearing the commotion, too. A hunter breaking down a door with an axe would have made a lot of noise. When they get downstairs, the news is grim. They've found 17 bodies throughout the resort.
Jesus Christ, Stiles says.
Between that and the 14 who died in the ghoul attack, almost a third of the hunters that had come to the conclave were already dead. Besides Wednesday, there are three more injured, two men and a woman, sitting in stunned silence, all of them coated with blood. Wednesday gives a hiss, and her fingers suddenly dig into Stiles' arm. That's Kyle, she says, tilting her chin towards one of those men. Stiles nods slowly and gets Wednesday sitting down. He gestures for Scott to come take a look at her.
Have you seen Dr. Deaton this morning?
He asks, and Scott shakes his head. Stiles frowns. He'll have to deal with that in a few minutes.
I just don't understand what happened, Angela Peretti is saying to Vanessa in a distressed tone of voice. There's no sign of forced entry at any of the doors, and these wounds, they aren't the sort made by ghouls or even werewolves. This is like someone attacked them with an axe, Stiles says.
Angela looks up, startled, but then nods.
Yeah, that's what happened. There were probably at least two fire axes in this hotel, plus maybe one for cutting firewood. Or maybe some of the hunters brought their own axes? Who knows?
What are you implying? Vanessa asks, frowning.
Nothing bad about good men, Stiles says. I think it's clear that sorcery was involved. That's the only reason we wouldn't have heard the commotion.
He takes a deep breath.
Lucy? He adds, using her real name to avoid confusion.
Wednesday nods and hobbles to her feet.
Vanessa, Kyle attacked me.
Her voice is blunt as ever, though it's not unkind. I managed to fight him off, and then I hid, because I didn't want to kill him if I didn't have to. He didn't seem to recognize me. Vanessa swallows hard and closes her eyes for a minute. Then she goes to sit beside the young man. Stiles can't remember how he's related to her. If he's a grandson or a grandnephew. He's soaked with blood, arms folded over his stomach, rocking back and forth slightly.
Kyle, she says, her voice steady and calm. Can you tell me what happened last night?
Kyle looks at her with eyes so wide that the whites are visible all the way around.
Ghouls, he whispers. They got inside. They were everywhere.
Vanessa looks questioningly at Chris, who had been coordinating the search. He shakes his head.
We didn't find any ghouls anywhere, he says.
Nobody bothers to point out that the blood the three hunters are soaked with is red human blood. Nobody needs to.
Okay, son, Vanessa says, and squeezes his arm. You did a good job of fighting off those ghouls, you hear me? Good job. We're gonna get you patched up now.
She stands and faces the other hunters.
If anyone tries to hold my grandson responsible...
No, Vanessa, we understand, Mikhail says. We know it wasn't his fault.
Should we tell them?
Derek murmurs, watching Scott and some of the other hunters with medical training move in to help.
Absolutely not, Vanessa says, glowering.
But then she seems to realize that Derek is only trying to figure out what the best course of action would be.
No, to tell them what they did, it would break them, and they'd never remember it. Even if we could show them a video. To them, they fought off a bunch of ghouls trying to kill them. The only thing telling them the truth would accomplish would be to hurt them.
Chris is nodding in agreement. He looks between Stiles and Tom and says,
This must be that sorcerer Dante DeLuca, right? Seems like his style, from what Jim said about him.
That'd be my guess, yeah, Stiles says. Probably picked a few hunters who either didn't have good enough protection spells or that he could manage to pick a hair off of.
Then let's hunt the son of a bitch down, Hannah says. Hang on, Tom says. I'm all for that, but in terms of priorities, the first thing is getting the civilians to safety, the kids and the wounded, too. The bridge isn't safe,
Jim Stoddard says. He's been watching this from the side of the room, not contributing, probably to avoid drawing attention to himself. Indeed, as soon as he speaks, several people scowl in his direction.
"We'll have to chance it," Tom says, staying calm in the face of the rising hostilities. "The wind isn't too bad at the moment." "We can't just send them back to the mainland," Jim says. "Can you imagine the unholy fuss they'll kick up? We'll have news crews, cameras."
"Jesus Christ," Julian says. "We can send a few people with them to make sure they don't talk if that's such a huge concern to you. But Tom is right. We need to get them off this island before anything else happens."
"I just think that there could be better ways to handle this. I mean, for one thing, we don't know how to run this place. We still have to eat."
"Could you stop being such a colossal dick for 5 minutes?" Vanessa snaps at him. "People are dying in droves and you're concerned about who's going to make you a sandwich?"
"That's not what I meant and you know it."
Derek leans into Stiles, nudging him with his shoulder and wrapping an arm around his shoulders. He's staring at Jim with narrowed eyes.
"What don't you want us to know?"
Jim's mouth tightens into a grimace.
"I refuse to be interrogated by..."
"By what?" Stiles asks, his eyes flaring crimson. "Go ahead, finish that sentence. I dare you, Stoddard." Derek squeezes Stiles' shoulder, but directs his comments to Jim Stoddard.
"Your heartbeat skyrocketed the minute that Tom brought up sending people back to the mainland. You're hiding something, and I think we'd all like to know what."
After a few moments to sulk, Jim heaves an irritated sigh.
"The bridge is out."
There's a round of confused blinks before Chris says,
"What do you mean, out?" "I guess a better way to put it would be, the bridge is gone," Jim says.
Stiles thinks of that enormous roll of thunder that morning. It hadn't been thunder at all. The bridge had collapsed, probably under the strain of the weather. Although, more direct sabotage was certainly an option.
"Oh boy!
You mean we're trapped here?" Angela Peretti says, her voice rising in alarm.
"When the hell were you going to tell us?" Mikhail demands.
"Well, I thought maybe once the storm had died down..."
"Shut up!" Vanessa cuts him off impatiently.
"Christ!"
Stiles turns to Jackson. "How do you feel about building a way?" Jackson rubs a hand over the back of his head.
"I could build one back to that diner we ate right after we got to Maine, but I don't know how they'd feel about a ton of people suddenly showing up on their doorstep. There's nowhere private around here that I could build one to."
"What if you built one back to the den?" Stiles asks. It's not a great solution, but he's willing to let a few people crash at their den if it'll keep them safe. He could send a few pack members back with them to make sure they didn't get into any trouble. If any of them were willing to leave him on this crazy island.
"I don't think I can build one all the way across the country and have it be stable enough to get everyone through," Jackson says. "But if Deaton helped, I could probably hold it long enough."
"Okay," Stiles says. "We'll need him to help track down Dante anyway. But I haven't seen him yet this morning. Let's go see where he's at."
Jackson nods and heads down the hallway. Stiles and Derek follow. Tom and Chris stay in the foyer to help keep everyone calm and organized.
Jackson takes the stairs up to the third floor and heads down one of the hallways, with Wilma on his heels, her normal tail wagging unusually subdued. He stops at one of the doors and raps on it.
"Hey, Alan," he calls out.
After a minute goes by with no answer, Stiles says, "He probably already left his room, what with the screaming and all."
"No, he's in there. He's doing something. I can feel it."
"Maybe we shouldn't bother him if he's in the middle of something,"
Derek says.
"It won't mess him up. He can trance like nobody's business. Probably why the screaming didn't bother him."
Jackson rattles the knob, but it's locked.
"Hang on. Our rooms are adjoining. I don't think he locked the door that connects them. We should be able to get in that way."
Stiles follows him into the room next door, and then through the connecting door. Dr. Deaton is indeed in a trance, sitting Indian style on the floor of his room, inside a circle that looks like it's made of salt, not mountain ash.
He doesn't move a muscle when they come inside. Stiles is about to ask what they should do when Jackson says, "That's weird." "What's weird?" Stiles feels himself tense up. "Well, it looks like he's still trying to connect with the water elemental, but that should have taken him an hour tops." Jackson sees the question on Stiles' lips and gestures impatiently. "The circle, sea salt. Jesus, has he been at this all night?" It's a rhetorical question, and Stiles makes no effort to answer it. The temperature in the room starts to drop, and he can tell that Jackson is doing something to try to figure it out himself. Jackson is holding one hand out, fingers brushing over where the barrier would start. Then he withdraws, frowning. "This is not good."
"What?"
Stiles asks, trying not to snap. "There's something, kind of like a barrier, around his mind. He can't get out and wake himself up. And if I tried to get in, odds are good I'd break, like, everything." Stiles doesn't need to ask what breaking everything might mean in a situation like this. "What if we break the circle?"
"Wouldn't matter. The circle hasn't mattered for hours." Jackson is scowling. "He went looking for that water elemental, but I bet it was never even there. Sally's the one who's been controlling the storm, and that's why it was dipping in the evening. She spins it up at night, and then it lasts most of the day before the power starts to flag. But she's lured him out into the energy surrounding the place, so she can slap him down. She knew he's the one with the most power here, and she wanted him out of play."
"Will he be all right?" Derek asks.
"Physically, he's fine. Although I guess he's gonna get real thirsty after a while," Jackson says. "Let's get him lying down."
"Okay." Derek picks Deaton up and puts him down on the bed. The veterinarian doesn't respond to this, doesn't move or protest. "I wonder if Scott has the stuff he would need to do an IV.
"Probably, but I doubt he brought enough saline bags to last a week."
Stiles rubs both hands over his face.
"Jackson, stay here with him. I'll send Scott to you."
They jog back downstairs. The bodies have been moved, although there are still pools of blood. Most of the Hunter Council is gathered there, and Justin has ventured out of his room with Yasmin beside him, his arm around her shoulders. Wednesday is there, leaning against Sketch's shoulder, but her eyes are closed and it looks like she's dozed off.
"Deaton is unavailable," Stiles says, and Tom's expression tightens. "Looks like he was trying to calm the storm and received a psychic bitch slap for his trouble. Jackson is with him. We'll see what we can do for him, but in the meantime, we don't have the juice necessary to build a way that everyone can get through. We need to find a way to protect the civilian staff here on the island."
"Well, a room lined with mountain ash is probably the best way to do that," Allison says. Stiles looks around for the people who are the most comforting.
"Julian, Sam, do you mind going to explain things to the staff? I mean, as much as we're able. We can give them those suites on the second floor. They can stay safe there until we've figured out a long-term solution."
Julian nods. "Okay, I've got some mountain ash in my things. Should be enough."
"What about the kids?" Hannah asks. "My grandson is here and he's not trained enough for this."
"We can separate the kids in another wing," Tom says. "You can pass things through mountain ash, right? So it won't be any problem to get them food."
"Someone's going to need to be in charge of the kitchen," Jim says.
"I'll talk to Victoria," Chris says. "She'll probably enjoy the challenge."
"We'd better make sure everyone has adequate supplies," Tom says. "Not just food and water, but candles, matches, toiletries. Poor kids are going to be bored out of their skulls. We should bring them some books and some of those games from downstairs to keep them occupied."
"Condoms," Justin puts in. Several people give him an offended look. This doesn't faze him. Those kids are, what, 15 through 17? Both guys and girls? And you're locking them up with hardly anything to do, no electricity, and minimal adult supervision?
Yep. Condoms.
Chris pushes both hands through his hair.
"I hate to say it, but he does have a point."
"I don't carry condoms with me everywhere I go," Tom says.
"That's cool. I do," Justin says cheerfully. "Yaz and I double team on birth control."
"I can grab some from my stuff, too," Stiles says, because he always carries an emergency condom in case of Erica,
and she probably has an entire box of them.
How many do you think they'll need? Mikhail asks, with eyebrows arched, and then says, never mind, don't answer that. My daughter Maggie is only 16 and I don't want to think about it. Just give me the supplies and I'll corral the kids and give them the talk.
The group disperses. Chris heads off to talk to Victoria and to see to supplies with Mikhail. Sam and Julian go to talk to the staff. Sketch picks Wednesday up and says he's going to take her upstairs to get some rest. She's too tired to do anything more than scowl at him. Styles realizes a moment too late that he's suddenly standing in a group of people who can't stand him, save one or two. Stella Jones folds her arms over her chest and says, well, I guess we can see who's responsible for this disaster, can't we?
What's that supposed to mean?
Derek growls at her. 31 hunters dead and another half dozen wounded, yet you and your pack are all fine, Stella sneers. Only because Scott's healed from when you shot him yesterday, Styles retorts.
Guess I should work on my aim.
Styles is about to unleash a truly devastating comeback. Just give him a moment to think of one. When the eldest Gutierrez chooses to chime in,
she has a point. You avoided the ghoul's attack. Could it be that none of your pack volunteered to patrol last night because you knew what was going to happen?
I didn't volunteer my pack to patrol because I was afraid they would get shot.
And isn't that convenient for you? Stella says. Styles pushes both hands through his hair.
Sure, he says. Just like it was convenient that Matt Loesch was killed and you blamed it on me. Just like it was convenient that the spell Eli Whittaker put on me was designed to keep me from solving the crime that Ruben Gutierrez had committed. Just like it was convenient when you were otherwise occupied when Whittaker came around to kill me. My life is just full of these conveniences. I'm like fucking Circle K.
Vanessa gives a snort of laughter. I'll grant that Styles and his pack have been lucky to make it out unscathed so far, but given that their strategy has been duck and cover since the conclave started, that's not too surprising. Exactly how do you suggest he arranged all this?
He already forced us to invite these curs, Stella says, with a gesture to Justin. Who knows who else he invited?
Yeah, I bet he went door to door at Jim Stoddard's prison handing out RSVP cards, Justin says, rolling his eyes, in a manner that suggests he can't even be bothered to get insulted.
Well, someone got all these creatures here, Gutierrez says.
Maybe it was someone who's intimately familiar with how these prisons are operated, Derek says, his glare practically boring holes into Gutierrez's skull.
Hannah Winchester interrupts, sounding annoyed. The only way we'll find out is if we capture one of them and interrogate them. So the rest of you can do what you want, but I'm going to get to work.